Welcome back to WBOI Presents. This is the last part of the politics of time, picking up with a look at the local history of daylight savings time. Here's Andy Downs.
On a more local level, let's talk about Indiana for a moment. Indiana has had some interesting time with daylight saving time, let's call it. We did, back in 1949, actually outlaw daylight saving time. Not just that we wouldn't observe it, but outlawed it, said that it cannot be observed. We did spend some time in the Central Zone, 1957, and then switched to the Eastern Time Zone in 1972. These are all decisions made by the state legislature. The state legislature is a body that is making rules about everything in your life. They're going to make rules about taxation, about public safety, about the environment, and yes, very much so, about time as well. We, in 2005, had a General Assembly that approved the observance of daylight saving time. As you all know, Jamie was surprised by the fact that we weren't, and in 2006, we became the 48th state in the Union to observe it. Arizona and Hawaii do not. But in spite of this, and the argument that was made by Mitch Daniels when he pushed for daylight saving time was not about saving money. It was not about some of the arguments we've heard. Instead, it was actually about creating a uniform standard for economic development reasons. It's confusing when you have to say to people, well, this time of the year I'm an hour behind you, or I'm an hour ahead of you. That it does create some problems. I know at one point some friends of ours who were living in Indiana, but in Northwest, where they sort of observed daylight saving time, said they were coming to visit Jill and me in Fort Wayne, and they would be here at 11 o'clock. 11 o'clock rolled by, they weren't here. 11:15, no. 11:30, no. We were getting nervous. This was pre-cell phone days. And then at about 11:45, it dawned on us, oh, they're going to get here at 11 o'clock Central Time. And sure enough, noon, they knocked on the door, and there they were. These sorts of problems happened quite a bit in the state, and it was happening throughout the entire state, especially for places that didn't interact with, say, Chicago on a consistent basis. So the more sporadic, the more conversation went into figuring out what time it was or what time the meeting was going to take place. But the standardization argument then sort of fell apart, because now, today, we have 80 states in the eastern zone. We have 80 counties in the eastern zone and 12 counties in the central zone. So we're not even standardized today. But this gets back to the question of where is your economic activity? Mm-hmm. If you are in Northwest Indiana, or if you're in Southwest Indiana, you are interacting with Central Time Zone folks. Mm-hmm. If you're in Southeast, or basically anything east of 30, you're dealing primarily with Eastern folks.
And it's worth pointing out that while we're not standardized internally so that all people in Indiana are in the same time zone, we now, as a result of Mitch Daniels' efforts, are standardized nationally so that we switch to DST and off DST with 47 other states.
Right, and that has helped because now it's not a question of, oh, is this when you're with us or not? Now
That's
it's
right.
a question of, in which time zone are you? And I think most of us have had a conversation with somebody in another state where we've had to ask, what time zone are you?
Exactly, and there are economic costs to that. Reading a quote from a New York Times article in 2005 on the debate in Indiana, Kevin Breininger, president of the Indiana Chamber of Commerce, is quoted saying, up to now it's been death by 1,000 paper cuts. The missed conference calls, the missed plane flights, the missed delivery schedules.
And there's something to be said for that. I think we still probably have several of those going on, but now then it's just it's
for
a different
other reasons.
It's a different human error at that point,
exactly.
I think. Yeah. When we are looking at the role of government, Jamie, you brought up that there are some interesting cases out there.
There are.
Where would you like to begin?
Well, there are basically two ways in which time zones can be unusual. The first is they can have an unusual offset from the one-hour standard. So, you know, regardless of what time zone you're in, you're usually in a multiple of 1 hour away from other time zones. There's some time zones that that don't do that. And the other thing is there are time zones of unusually large size. And so those are the two things. One, the offset, two, the size. So let's look at the offset. There are a number of countries in the world that have a 30-minute offset. So they're half an hour off most of the rest of the world. And just to give you a list of this, of these countries, they include Iran, Afghanistan, India, as I mentioned before, 5.5 hours off universal coordinated time, Myanmar, North Korea, which famously declared its own new time zone recently. We can talk about that too. Part of Australia, And part of Canada, and we might talk about Newfoundland in a few minutes. Some of you may have heard about Venezuela's 30-minute offset. Just last year, Venezuela returned to the one-hour offset, so it sort of went back to what is globally the norm. And then we have a few that are really odd, and they have 45, or looking at it another way, 15-minute offsets. And the most famous of these, and the only one that is a full sovereign state, is Nepal and the Himalayas, but also the Chatham Islands. Part of an integral part of New Zealand, off the east coast of New Zealand, run at a 45-minute offset. And unofficially, about 200 people in the center of Australia use what is called Central West Australian time. It's unofficial, but it's on a 45-minute offset. And I admit to not being an expert on this, but a few of the articles I read noted that this involved about 200 people, including one roadhouse.
That's so a level of specificity.
A few towns and a roadhouse.
Yes, that's a level of specificity. Yeah. It's very detail-oriented.
Exactly. And so those are offsets. Let me talk briefly about zones of unusual size. There are a lot of countries that span two zones geographically but choose to remain one time zone, and that makes a lot of sense. Usually these countries just spill over into the second one. A bit stranger are countries that cover what should be three time zones but have only one. Kazakhstan is a good example of this. We also have Alaska and Greenland. Of course, they're not fully sovereign countries. They're parts of other countries. Alaska spans four time zones, what would normally be four time zones, and Greenland spans what would be five time zones and operates only two of them. But it's worth noting with Alaska and Greenland, and we should now get into sort of reasons why there are these unusual offsets, these unusually large zones. Alaska and Greenland, of course, are very far to the north, and when you get close to the poles, of course, lines of longitude come much closer together. So these examples are probably more dramatic than they may seem. But there is one very famous example of an unusually large time zone that was formed for very political reasons, and that is Beijing Standard Time, which covers all of China. China should geographically have up to five different time zones, but operates on only one. There's some really interesting research on this, but it's very clear that the impetus for this was political. This one of the very first acts of the new communist government after the revolution in China in 1949 was to create Beijing Standard Time, and it was done for an avowedly political purpose. It is noteworthy that Beijing, the city on which the time zone is based, is very far to one side of China. It's very far to the east, so a central city was not picked. Instead, the capital city was picked, even though its time zone was pretty grossly inappropriate for the far western portions of the country. And today, it remains an issue in China. Of course, it helps, I suppose, to some degree to have standardization throughout the country, but the further west you go, the more distorted the time zone becomes, and the more common it is for people to basically keep two time zones in their head, one Beijing official Beijing time and the other a local time that people, you know, often use in their ordinary daily activities.
For those of you who've been looking at the screens behind us, you'll see that we've had a few examples up on the screen for a while that base everything off of London at noon. And when you look at that, what you see is that several places are interesting. For example, Fort Wayne, we're 4 hours off, and this is as of October 31st. October 30th, before the United States shifts. St. John's, Canada, Newfoundland is 3.5 hours. Kathmandu, there's the 45 or 15-minute example that Jamie mentioned a moment ago. New Delhi, a 30-minute example. And then, of course, two of my favorite, Beijing and Kashgar, which are just about as far apart as you can get in China, are both at the exact same time right now. And then Adelaide down in Australia is one of the half-hour observers. There's a question here that we'll get to right at the end, I think, and that's a question of, what really is necessary about time. There are people who say, okay, fine, let's just all have one international time. You sort of already have suggested that. And so instead of going to work at 8 o'clock in the morning, you might actually go to work at midnight, but, it's still 8 o'clock in the morning as what we're used to today. I do want to quickly talk about the example of Newfoundland, and Newfoundland and Labrador was not originally part of Canada. It was off on its own. It eventually was absorbed into the Commonwealth, and when it did, or before it did, it had established what time it was, and it did so based on the sun, based on geography. It decided that the 30-minute break made sense to them, and this was, although at the, you know, sort of the beginning of understanding a more global market, it still made some sense for them to have this as their time. If you listen to CBC or watch things on CBC, you will see that Newfoundland still observes 30 minutes off of everything else. They're 30 minutes ahead of everybody. And interestingly, they will occasionally use this to their advantage. They will, for example, refer to the world premiere of television programs because they start half an hour earlier in Newfoundland than they do everywhere else. So they'll do things like that, little tricks. But when they became part of Canada, there was really, you know, sort of a desire to keep some semblance of themselves as an entity, and 30 minutes off was a way to do that. In the 1960s, there was an attempt to actually put them into Atlantic time, and there was basically a revolt among the people. No, we don't want to do that. We lose our sense of self if we do that. If you look at a map, though, what you'll see is the island of Newfoundland, and that's where they really observe the 30 minutes quite carefully. In the southeastern part of Labrador, they observe it, but in the rest of it, they observe Atlantic. They're technically on Newfoundland time, but in their heads, they're keeping track of Atlantic time instead. And then, of course, the map of Australia is a very interesting one. I'm not sure if you want to make any other comments about Australia at this time.
Well, Australia is complicated because I think, what, maybe four states plus the Australian Capital Territory use DST and the others don't. And then you have half hour offset. So Australia gives you everything you might want in a time zone controversy. You get some parts of it on DST, some parts of it off, and you get half hour increments, et cetera. So it's a pretty interesting place. I wanted to say something else about the reasons for these unusual time zones. And Andy and I both, I think, have alluded to these. The reasons boil down to geography and politics. Mm-hmm. And very often, it's a combination of both. As Andy said with Newfoundland, you know, maybe it's primarily geographic, but it also creates a certain political point or sort of becomes deeply embedded in local culture, always has been, and becomes a point of local pride. So, you know, when we look at these offsets, I mentioned Kazakhstan earlier in what should be three time zones, but if you look at a map of Kazakhstan, most of it's in the middle of those three time zones. So geographically, it makes sense. The port parts in the other two time zones are smaller parts of the country. Very different from what we said about China, where the whole country is on the time zone of something of a city on one extreme. When we look at very political reasons, we have the example of China. We also have this great example from North Korea. North Korea created its own new time zone in August of 2015 called Pyongyang time, named after the capital. And there's a great quote here from the North Korean press agency. This is quoted in the Washington Post. And here's the rationale for creating its own time zone. And I quote, "The wicked Japanese imperialists committed such unpardonable crimes as depriving Korea of even its standard time while mercilessly tramping down its land."
That's some reasoning right there.
You know, if you're going to come up with your own time zone, you want to make it a good reason.
I can respect that reason.
There you go.
Being trampled is a big deal.
It is.
Let's talk about proposals for reform, shall we?
Right. So here in Indiana, We have obviously some clear options, or at least some continuing controversies, right?
Yeah, actually, if you look at the General Assembly's website, daylight saving time is still a subject listing in the subject listing of legislation that's available to look at. There was nothing filed last year, just to calm everyone down. No one was trying to do anything. I don't know what will happen this year, but it is an awkward thing. I've talked with elected officials who've actually polled on this, and they pretty much say if you look at Highway 30, which divides the state in half from north to south, people on the eastern side like eastern time, people on the western side like central time. And so it's hard for us to find an answer to the question. Yeah. Beginning to observe daylight saving time brought some uniformity, but not fully within the state. I mean, you have to worry about what time it is when you drive from one county to another in some instances, and for some folks that's a bit of an issue. Mm-hmm. We do know that it's something that people still care about. As recently as I believe it was last year, there was a legislator who said she was going to introduce some legislation about daylight saving time, eliminating it again, and use the argument of safety. It's dangerous for children in the morning when it becomes so dark, when we fall back. that it's it hasn't actually helped us economically, it didn't save us any energy, et cetera, et cetera. So a lot of the, mm-hmm. the continuing argument comes up when it comes to Indiana specifically.
Sure. And in other parts of the country, there's some interesting proposals, none of which have seemed to gain a whole lot of traction. But for example, in Massachusetts, Maine, and New Hampshire, there's been discussion of joining Atlantic time because geography would seem to suggest that those parts of New England, which are really, you know, a lot farther east than most parts of the East Coast, really geographically make sense in Atlantic time. But that would create a fifth time zone for the mainland U.S. And as I said, this proposal hasn't gotten much traction, but, you know, there are always people talking about ideas like this.
Well, let's clarify, because it actually got a lot of traction in Maine and was working its way through the General Assembly quite nicely until someone attached an amendment, which granted meant, you know, 50% plus one voted for it, but attached an amendment that the other states also had to begin observing it.
Well, right. And again, that's that argument for standardization. So yeah. There's a strong realization that going it alone doesn't help, particularly as the world becomes more globalized, the internet, et cetera. There are, however, broader broader, you know, proposals for how to change things. Alison Schrager, in an article in the Atlantic Monthly from November 2013, got a lot of discussion by proposing that the country as a whole, and again, this is very much in keeping with standardization, but sounds like a radical proposal, shift to just two time zones and scrap DST. So we get rid of daylight savings so we don't switch, and we just glom together the Eastern and Central time zones, and we glom together the Mountain and Pacific time zones, and it would just help make things a lot simpler. And taking this logic much, much farther, we have the proposal of two Johns Hopkins University professors.
You can't trust those people from Maryland.
No, well, of course not. Steve Hanke, an economist with Johns Hopkins, is also a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. And Dick Henry, who's a professor of physics and astronomy at Hopkins. Let me back up by saying that several years before that, they created what they called the Hanke-Henry permanent calendar, proposing that we begin every year on a Monday, right? I think it was a Monday. So every year begins the same. January 1st is a Monday. And so your birthday always falls on the same day of the week, for example. And, you know, Christmas always falls on the same. So, these guys obviously are drawn to the appeal of standardization.
Yes.
And this is standardization in the extreme. And so then they went farther and said, look, we live, now looking at time zones, we live basically in a world that has been transformed by the internet, and real-time interactions are happening all over the world all at once. So why do we even need time zones? And so their proposal is on January 1st, 2018, and they're proposing that this not be done necessarily through legislation, but as a citizens' movement. So if you want something to believe in and you've been just dying to get out there and change society, here you go, you can follow them. January 1st, 2018, all time zones be abolished and the whole world use the time centered on London. So, so what that would mean, of course, is that everyone not living in the time zone centered on London would have to adjust their thinking. Here in the middle of the United States, we'd probably be getting up at 12 o'clock. 12 noon would be kind of a standard, normal wake-up time. And I see people in the audience thinking that might be nice.
Yeah.
But it also means
it's not 12 noon.
It also means that you're eating dinner at midnight, so or close to it. So obviously, that proposal is probably not going to gain a whole lot of traction. But you know. But this is standardization taken to the extreme. And their argument is that in terms of economics, this would be very, very efficient. There'd no longer be any misunderstandings. But, of course, it'd be a huge cultural shift, right, for people to be thinking about, you know, the hours in very different ways.
I do have to point out, from a standardization standpoint, Ireland, for example, flipped a week before, or fell back a week before the United States.
That's true. And the UK did too.
And the UK did too. So what you end up with is different countries deciding when daylight saving time begins and ends, or deciding at different times when that begins and ends. And this idea that this is about standardization, this is about better economic development, there's a whole lot of mess out there still.
Maybe we can solve all the world's economic problems through this. What do you think?
I'm willing to give it a shot.
We'll work on that and come back with another panel discussion.
I do want to thank Jamie for spending some time talking with me about daylight saving time. I will mention one final thing. The first year we were observing, There was an end-of-year gathering in the department, and unfortunately for Jamie, there were at least two people at that party who were very, very excited about the topic of daylight saving time. Not supportive, but excited. And every now and then, I would just ask Jamie a question and make sure that when he answered, those two people were nearby, and then a good 10 or 15 minutes would get lost watching them argue, and I would walk away, and then I would come back later on and stir things up again, because Jamie did not quite understand our view as Hoosiers of daylight saving time, or time in general, apparently.
Andy is a provocateur.
I want to thank everyone for joining us. I want to thank College Television for capturing this for us, WBOI for broadcasting it. Remember, this is brought to you by the American Democracy Project, the Department of Political Science, as well as the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics. My name is Andy Downs. This is Jamie Toole. Thank you very much for joining us.
This has been an episode of WBOI Presents. If you missed any parts of it, the conversation will be made available on our website at WBOI.org. The music for tonight's show is by Mark Waldick. Folk Tales with Julia Meek is coming up. Stay tuned.